This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm Gaius, John Batchelor, and Germanicus, Malkovleos, is here. On a Sunday evening in Londinium, it is rainy, but it's coming winter. And we're to be entertained later by what we're told are spectacular jugglers from Gaul. We're unsure what that means, but my heart is light because I won't be weighed down with Greek proverbs. However, we turn to the battle in the 21st century and what we observe of it here in the first century. All of the institutions that are in place for us in Londinium, far away from Rome, all of those institutions will be intact in the 21st century. The one that's most pertinent at this point is the institution of participatory democracy. Everybody gets a vote. Or in the case of the EU or NATO, everybody gets a vote and no dissent. And if there is dissent, well, we'll address that. Germanicus, a very good evening to you. The puzzle now is not the 21st century, but is something that we know very well works here in the first century, which is siege tactics. Caesar was very skillful in understanding that you don't need to fight a battle if a siege will do. Battles are for fame or desperation or during the Civil War to show that your rivals are inferior. However, siege tactics can be used on people you regard as subordinate, not Roman, not worthy of our efforts on the battlefield. They hold up in their cities, and we surround them, we build the ramparts, and we wait. We starve them out, or we cut their water supply, or we make it very clear that they can't win on the battlefield, and why not surrender? At which point, we'll kill all the men or sell them into slavery. We'll divide the women up, and the children best go with their mothers. However, we also know that siege tactics worked during the Crusades. I'm thinking of the Siege of Acre, which took place at the end of the 13th century, and was the last moment that the Crusaders had a pretension of having the Kingdom of Jerusalem. They were driven from the land, finally, by the Mohammedans, the Saracens, people that we know come from different parts of the Ummah. However, the Siege of Acre was the demonstration that siege tactics always work. You break down the walls, you starve the population, you make it clear that it can't escape, and the morale plunges, disease starts, sometimes pandemic, but generally disease inside because of bad water. The women and children are cut off from sustenance. The church fills up with, in the case of Acre, the church fills up with the wounded. And eventually the siege is successful. Here we are in the 21st century. It is recognizable to us Romans that Russia has put Ukraine under siege. The missiles are not aimed at the electricity or the water or the freedom of the movement of the population in particular. They're aimed at the walls of Kyiv. Break down the walls. The walls are in the mind. And Kyiv has built strong walls because it says, we have motives. We want all of our kingdom back, everything. The Russians keep firing missiles. Lights, heat, fresh water, hospitals, all at risk. Siege tactics works. So my puzzle to you, Germanicus, we see it as Romans. Certainly Moscow sees it. They're fighting a 13th century battle. Does NATO see it? Does NATO know that there's now a timeline before the walls crumble and the game is up? Good evening to you.
Good evening, Gaius. I think NATO, like the United States, which is the beating heart of NATO in terms of its military power, does not think in terms of strategic sieges, the use of the siege as an offensive focal point at hitting the enemy's center of gravity. And the Russians do. And we should remember, as you have recalled for us tonight, that Romans really developed the art of siege warfare. They forced the Greeks to develop it in the long siege of Syracuse, for example, which Archimedes held off the Romans, held them at bay for months and months, And of course, when they finally took the city, he was slain. Caesar conquered Gaul with sieges. His most formidable opponents, the Nervii, were undone in a siege where Caesar created a giant ramp, kind of a foretaste of what would be done to the Jews in the great Jewish war by Titus at the siege of Masada. And at the siege of Alesia, what Caesar did, which was brilliant, was to besiege Vercingetorix in his oppidum, Alesia, a hill village fort, and then build a giant enceinte of miles and miles of works facing outward that all the rest of Gaul coming to the aid of Vercingetorix would have to assault. And so he pulled all of Gaul into a decisive battle, which was in fact a siege that was creating for Rome a center of gravity in which the war would be decided and decided on Rome's terms. It was a magnificent strategy, and it worked. The same has happened to Ukraine. Ukraine is essentially incapable of maneuver warfare. Its army, however well trained by NATO, and it was a very, very powerful army at the beginning of the war. It was probably the most powerful army in Europe, except for Russia. And yet it was only really able to offer successful counters to the Russian assault in the form of active defense. And so at the gates of Kiev, for example, or in other cities that the Russian tank columns had zipped by, these forces were able to hold out and withstand a Russian surge at the beginning of the war. Then when Russia decided that its coup de main would not succeed, it pulled back and focused on the Southern Front. But the Southern Front, as we've seen, from north of Crimea all the way up the Donbas to Kharkov, consists of a fortified line, which is in no way different from the fortifications of the Western Front in World War I. And Russia was forced with a small capability, an economy of force operation with not enough personnel, was forced to assault these impregnable Ukrainian positions. And it has been a war of assault after assault that has lasted month after month. And in fact, we've talked about this. It very much resembles the successful German defensive efforts in the pullback from the Hindenburg Line to the Hindenburg Line in 1917, and very much to the German efforts at not halting, but very much slowing the Allied advance up the Italian peninsula in World War II with the famous Gothic and Gustav lines. And they essentially stalled the Allied advance for several years in Italy. It was quite an achievement. And so Ukraine has been able, with more people, to continue to hold these fortified lines against Russia, which are now, just now, beginning to crack. And yet, essentially, the siege operates on a dynamic where the besieged forces lose unless they are relieved. So, for example, in our own recent past as Romans, we celebrate the fact that Caesar laid a trap for the hundreds of thousands of Gallic warriors rushing to save Vercingetorix at Alesia. And so we, NATO, the United States, which expected that its flying supply lines would bring Ukraine the power it needed to bring the Soviets down, excuse me, the Russians down, came to naught. In effect, like the siege of Alesia, all of the massive aid that we poured into Ukraine has been used up, expended. And the Russians have held, just like the siege lines at Alesia held. And now the U.S. and NATO has nothing left to give. If you look at the laundry list of the latest aid package to Ukraine, it's a lot of nothing. It's just little drips and drabs like stocking stuffers at Christmas. It's not enough to do anything, even to sustain Ukraine. Meanwhile, Ukraine, in holding on to its defensive position, being assaulted again and again, has seen its strength, its main strength, ebb away. The entire Ukrainian army that NATO trained up at the cost of billions in the early part of this century, all the way up until February of this year, that magnificent army is gone. They're all gone because the irrecoverable losses suffered by Ukraine in this war, a number in the hundreds of thousands, this would be dead. And those who will not be able again to return to the battlefield, this is a Soviet term used in the Great Patriotic War, but the irrecoverable losses meant that the Ukrainians now have to train out of nothing an entire new army. And they did that for the offensives from August to the end of November. And that army has been gone, degraded. And so Ukraine is in a position of military exhaustion in terms of its people. And so this is the timing for the vaunted Russian winter offensive, which will be unleashed at a time when there is no rail transport even to sustain the exhausted forces Ukraine has. So it is a moment where the siege is coming to its climax, at the point at which a combination of starvation, cutting the aqueducts, for example, which was done in the siege of Rome by the Goths besieging Belisarius in 534. This will be the moment at which an exhausted, starving Ukraine will see their walls pounded down. And I have to say, this was what happened at Acre.
Yes.
At Acre.
Yes. Yes.
The miracle HIMARS at Acre were called trebuchets, invented by the Byzantines. And the trebuchet was what brought down the Crusader kingdom, starting with Baybars and the siege of impregnable castles like a Crac de Chevalier, all the way up to Calawun siege of Acre in 1290 and the 1091. And so the impact of technology is important, and the Russians have their own trebuchet now. And this is what I'm hearing, is that the Russians don't just rely on massed artillery. Their massed artillery is now intensely precise, and that they can marshal large numbers of artillery and hit exactly what they want to hit. And that is creating an enormous new factor on the battlefield.
And NATO is registering something has changed. There is disunity in NATO, and we'll turn to that next, Germanicus, because while the Ukrainians are admired for holding out this long, NATO will have to live with its reluctance for a long time afterwards. Germanicus is Michael Vlahos. I am Gaius, John Batchelor. We're debating the fall of Ukraine before it's happened, but we know that siege tactics are always successful. The only instance where there could be an exception is, as Germanicus says, when their relief column arrives. But as of right now, in Londinium, we don't see a relief column. When we come back, why not? Where is the relief? This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.